Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Revolution again. It is good to be here. Anybody excited to be here today? Yeah. All right. Hey, my name is Nathan. It is so good to have you with us. To start today, I want to do something. How many of you have ever messed up before in life? All right. If you see everybody with their hand up, if you're sitting next to them, say, man, I'm so glad I'm not as messed up as you. Go ahead and do that real quick. All right. Are we all on the same page? All messed up? All right, good. That's welcome to Revolution, where we're all just a little messed up. We wanted to get on the same page because we're talking about this idea of being haunted by the past. And the reality of this series is that everybody has a past. Good, bad, indifferent. We have good things of the past, bad things of the past. But a lot of us have garbage of the past. And we realize that so many of us at times, we live with our past being an obstacle in our life. It gets in the way of what Jesus wants to do in our lives. It gets in the way of what God is calling us to do. And so we're looking at this idea that failure in our past, failure may have happened, regrets may have happened, but it doesn't have to be fatal in your story. Because of what Jesus did on the cross, because of what Jesus calls us to, that we can step into this new life that Jesus offers each and every one of us. And that's what this series is about. Last week, we looked at a man named Peter, and he had all kinds of mess ups. This week, we're going to look at a story that's built on one main final event. But things that led him to this moment may be things that shaped him. But I want to look at this first. Why is it that we can be so sure what the right thing to do is and still not do it? You know, I don't know if you're like me, but I have this gift that I know what the right thing to do is a lot of times. And I have the gift of not doing it. Anybody with me? Like, I know when I'm talking with Whitney and we're in an argument, I know what not to say. I know it's like in my mind is saying, I know not to say this. But guess what I do? I say it anyways. You know, growing up, I knew what the right thing was, but so many times, I don't do it. Anybody with me on that? Like, I know what the right thing to do is. I just have this really good ability not to do the right thing often. And so I got to thinking about this week, and a cliche phrase came to mind. You know all the cliche phrases, and sometimes they're cliche because they make sense. And so growing up, my stepdad used to say this, and I think it was to motivate me or to teach me, but it would be like when we're trying to fix something, a car, or a motorcycle, a bicycle, or trying to build something, he would always say this, like, hey, Nathan, you need the right tool for the job. Anybody ever heard that? Like, okay, calm down, home improvement. Like, I got it, right? Right tool for the job. And he quickly found out what I knew already. I didn't want to break his heart, but any tool in Nathan's hand is the wrong tool for the job. Call somebody else, man. Like, you don't want me to do it. But he was trying to teach me a lesson. Like, hey, listen, when you're making decisions, when you're doing things, the tool you have, the decisions you make in life, it's important. Apparently these guys didn't get the memo though, right? Like, we want the right tool for the job. And this is how he want us to fix the car, doing this, like use a piece of a couple wood and weld. Like, no. Or what about this guy? Right? It's like, hey, we got to trim the bushes. Now, I've been here for about 8 months. This would not surprise me if I drove past in this town at all, right? Like, see this. It's like, we got to trim the bushes. Oh, we got a crane and a riding mower. Sounds good, okay? Or this guy's like, hey, we got a flat tire. This would be me. If you want me to help you, this is the tool I would bring. You know, a flat tire, a little pump, hand pump to fix this tire. And then we got this one on. I got a toddler at home. She's like, hey, you know, if it doesn't fit, we just force it in there, right? And sometimes, as I thought about these pictures, I'm like, man, how many times does God look at Nathan's life and be like, dude, this is what you look like, man. What are you doing? How many times where God's just looking at my story, he's like, hey, Nathan, you know the right thing. You know how I want you to live. You know, it might be a little complicated, but it's easy. Love people, love God. You know what I want you to do. I've given you the right tools. And maybe he looks at your life and the decisions you've made, and he's like, hey, come on. You know that decision doesn't work. You know it doesn't fit. Why do you keep making it? It's like we know the right thing to do, and then we look at our lives and we're like, how did I get here? How did I get to this moment? And we look back like, oh, okay, I in that situation, yeah, I knew the right thing to do, but I didn't do it. Oh, over here, okay, yeah, that was a mistake, but it felt good. Like, it made me happy. Oh, yeah, I know I shouldn't have bought that, but come on, don't we really need it, right? Why is it that we know what to do, but we don't do it? And that's all this question. I kind of rephrased it, but what do you do when your body craves what your head knows you're not supposed to do? What do you do when you're tempted to do something that you know you're not supposed to do, regardless of faith? Now, as followers of Jesus, we know there's things that we're supposed to do and not do, right? We know, but regardless of that, like, just besides Jesus, like, what do you do when you're tempted to do something you know you're not supposed to do, but you really want to do it? What do you do in those moments? Anybody ever have a moment like that, right? And you can probably go back to your life and you can probably see moments or remember this moment. Like, you can probably think back 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 2 days ago, 2 hours ago, right? You're like, hey, I wanted to go to first service, but I slept in, right? I go to second service. What do you do when your body craves what your head knows you're not supposed to do? What do you do? Because how you answer this question, man, how you answer this question is going to send your life down a path. And you may not like it, but you can trace it back to this. What do I do when my body craves to do something I know I'm not supposed to do? What do I do when something in front of me, and I know it might be feel good, it might be good, it might be momentarily good, but it's not good for me in the long term? What do I do? And we've all been there, and we've all can trace back to credit card debt, relationship issues, family issues, life issues, substance issues. Like, we can trace back to this question. Because if you look back at your life, and look at your life 10, 15, 20, 25 years from now, a lot of where you are is going to have to do with how you answer this question. But so many times, the answer is, what do I do when my body craves what my head knows I'm not supposed to do? I just do it anyways, right? I do it. And then it leads you down to a path. It leads us this path. A path of failure. And we've all been there. Every single one of us. We've raised our hand. We've messed up. We've failed. We've fallen short. So the question today isn't going to be, what happens if I do fail? That's not going to be the question. The question today we're going to look at is, I failed. I've done the things I know I'm not supposed to do, and we've all been there. But what do I do after? How do I come out of that moment so those moments don't continue to define me? How do I get past the path of failure? To do so, we're going to look at a man named Samson. Everybody say Samson. Samson. Samson's story, his life is a lot like a Fast and Furious movie. And what I mean by that is, you start off, they rob semis, and by the last movie, they're somehow in outer space. How did we get here? We don't know, but it's a lot of chaos in between. So Samson's life is a story of potential, a life of great potential. He's infamous and famous. He did something amazing, and did something a lot of things not so amazing. But his story is amazing. Overall, it's an amazing case study. Now, I can't go over every single aspect because it's covered in Judges 13, 14, 15, and 16. And if you wanted me to cover every single aspect, we'll be here till next Sunday. So we're gonna skim a lot of it. I'm going to summarize it. Go home, read it for yourself. There's a lot of chaos in it. It would be a really good Netflix movie. But Samson's life happens in the book of Judges. The book of Judges refers to a time period. Biblical history is, Moses leads the Israelites out of Egypt. They go into the wilderness. Things happen. But eventually they go to the promised land. So the Israelites, God's chosen people, are in the promised land. And so it's the time between the promised land and before kings. It's the time of judges. It refers to a time period. It's not like a judge that you think of today. It refers to a time period. And in this time period, all the Israelites, God's people, had to do was obey God. He's like, hey, obey, everything will be okay. But they don't do it. So for 400 years, there's a cycle. Disobedience, they cry out to God. God delivers them. He raises up a judge, which would be like a leader or a deliverer. And some of the judges are really good. Some of them aren't. There are 400 years to go through this cycle. Samson's one of those judges. He's a deliverer. He's supposed to help God's people get back on track. The only problem is, that's not how things go. And so when we pick up Samson's life, it doesn't start with Samson. It starts with his parents, who are old and can't have kids. And the angel appeared to his parents, to his mother, and said, hey, listen, even though you have been unable to have children, you will soon become pregnant and give birth to a son. This son will be Samson. And they go on to say, because this is happening, because this child is from God, I want you to live set apart. I want you to live differently. I want you to live by a vow. And it kind of the next verses kind of tell you about it. But the vow is called the Nazarite vow. And this is the quick summary of it. Don't get drunk. Don't touch anything dead, or in their terms, unclean. And don't cut your hair. All right? That's really important. The hair is very important. Let me tell you why. The hair, you know, Samson was rocking a man bun before 2000s, right? Like, he was doing it before it was popular. But it's really symbolic. His hair, it was a sign that God was giving him strength and a very specific purpose. So his hair is going to be the symbolic imagery that God is with him. And so the easy way to think about it is kind of think of a wedding ring. My wedding ring represents that I'm married and I took a vow to Whitney to be faithful, to love her, to honor her, to protect her, all those things. So this hair and this vow of not getting drunk, not touching anything dead, not cutting your hair was going to be this vow that said, hey, listen, I'm set apart by God. And that's what people would take it, to be set apart by God. And so if you will, Samson has the right tools. He knows what he's supposed to do. He knows from the moment he's born that he's special. From the moment that he touches this earth, that he has a purpose. From the moment that he takes his first breath, God wanted to do something amazing through Samson. He had the right tools. He knew what he shouldn't do, right? And his hair was gonna be a sign that God was with him, but he has a choice to make, just like each of us. Do what God wants me to do, live life with the right tool, doing the right things, not that we're perfect, but we're trying to make wise decisions, or do I do what I want to do? That's a question all of us face, all of us realize in our life. But Samson has to decide, am I going to live in my purpose? Or am I going to do what I want? Am I going to live in my purpose God has for me? Am I going to do what I want to do? Well, we kind of skip some verses. We go to chapter 14. At this point in Samson's life, he's kind of working border patrol between Israel, the Israelites' land, and the Philistines. And the Philistines are his enemy. And he's supposed to deliver the Israelites from the Philistines and protect them. And sometime while he's working on this border, he realizes he's special, that he's set apart. He's really realizing this. But while he's doing this, he sees something. And how many of our issues is that we just look at the wrong things? We see the wrong things? Well, he sees a woman, right? And he's like, uh-oh, okay? Samson has two major weaknesses. Women and lust. This is an adult room, if you will. He used the wrong tool for the job at times, right? He gets in trouble because of something that he likes to do. So he sees this woman, and she's beautiful. He's like, I want her. And so he goes back to, isn't that what every woman wants? Like, hey, I see you, I want you. That's how all the women want, right? Like, he sees this woman, he got the best pickup line in the world, I want you, right? And he goes back to his parents and he says, hey, I want to marry this woman. I want to marry this woman. And his parents say, Samson, are you crazy, dude? You know you're not supposed to do this. If you marry a Philistine woman, you're gonna do things God doesn't want you to do. The Philistines hate our God, they hate you. Samson's like, but I want her. I like the way she looks, I want her. And they're like, Samson, of all the people that should compromise, of all the people who's gonna make mistakes, Samson, you should know better. He doesn't care. So they make their journey on the way to her land, to her family's land, to have the celebration of the wedding because he's going to marry her. And as they're doing this, there's this kind of random verse that they're traveling and a lion decides to attack them. And at the moment, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. First of all, I'm glad I live in Logansport, Indiana, where when I'm driving through the neighborhood, the thing that's going to hit me is a random deer, not lions, right? Like, so, but a lion chases them. And he ripped the lion's jaw apart with his bare hands. Remember, he's strong. He's got this strength. That's what sets him apart. He's got this really unhuman-like strength. And he did it as easily as if it were a young goat. I don't really know what that means, right? Like, I try to figure it out. It's like, what do? They play cornhole and have competition and throw, hey, at the end of the night, let's just rip a young goat. I don't know, but that's what they did here, right? He ripped it as easily as a goat. But he didn't tell his father or mother. It goes on, he says, he comes back to this carcass of this lion, and he sees some honey in it, and he touches the lion that's dead. Remember, he's not supposed to touch anything dead, and he scoops out the honey, and he eats it. Why is this a big deal? It's not really a big deal in our eyes, but it's a big deal because he's not supposed to touch anything dead. And so what we see is that he already sees a woman that he wants, that he's not supposed to marry. He's going to go marry her, and on that trip, here's a little compromise. It doesn't seem like a big deal. But how many of you know that small compromises can lead to big failures down the road. We all know that, right? Little compromises. So his life is just filled with little compromises. So he goes there, he goes to the land he's supposed to get to with his lady he's going to marry. They have a ceremony, but while he's doing that, he offends every other man there. And they don't like him. And so things go down, and it kind of turns into like a Netflix drama. Like, there's a lot of chaos and drama, and it happens. And eventually, Samson's wife that he marries is married off to another man. He gets upset at that, like most of us would. And then he decides to go back and confront them. So he ties 300 foxes together in their tails, lights them on fire, and puts them in the field and destroys their crop and their livelihood. Well, they don't like that, so what do they want to do? They want to kill Samson. So now Samson has all these guys upset at him, and then this eventually goes down. Then he found the jawbone of a recently killed donkey. Like, where does this dude live? Like, he's got lions and donkeys everywhere, but he picked up the jawbone of a donkey, and he killed how many men? 1,000. He killed 1,000 men with it. It's like chaos. Like, does this sound like the dude who's doing things he's supposed to be doing? Not at all. It's all preventable messes, but he's in it. And then you don't hear about him for about 20 years. Right? Sometimes from one chapter of the Bible, the next can be a long time. It's about 20 years. And so you don't hear about him 20 years. And all of a sudden, you hear about him going to another city, another Philistine city, and he decides to sleep with a prostitute. Not a good idea. And while he's there, the Philistines find out he's there, and they want to kill him, and he barely escapes. And then we get to a famous story. Samson and Delilah. Anybody know this story growing up? Like, I've always been kind of never understood this. Why do we teach this in Sunday school? Like, this ain't a Sunday school for kids, but we teach it anyways. But Samson, okay. If this is your first time hearing Samson Delilah's story, here's what you're going to think. Can anybody really be that dumb? And the answer is yes. His name is Samson, okay? Like, yes, it's Samson. So he sees this woman, Samson. He sees this woman, Delilah. Here's what happens. Sometime later, Samson fell in love with a woman named Delilah, who lived in the valley of Sorek. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "Entice Samson to tell you what makes him so strong. Convince him to tell you where his strength comes from and how he can be overpowered and tied up securely. And if you do, each of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. Delilah, I know Samson's got all the muscles. He's got the hair. I know you love him. You might like him. But we will each give you all this money to figure out where his strength comes from." And she's like, "Samson, you may be good looking, but you're not that good looking." And she's like, "I'm in." And so now she starts to plan to kind of figure out the secret to Samson's strength. So Delilah said to Samson, "Oh, please tell me what makes you so strong and what you would take to keep you tied up securely." And at this point, this is when you run, y'all. Like, listen, you don't need me to tell you that. Someone wants to tie you up, you're out of here, right? And we're going to skip some verses, but we figure this out. And he's like, "Well, if you do this and do this, it'll work." And so she'll try what he says. He'll say, "Hey, Samson, the Philistines are here." And he'll wake up and break through the ropes, and nothing will happen. So she's like, "I can't believe you lied to me." And he should have been, "I can't believe you're crazy enough to tie me up. But it doesn't happen this way. He's like, "Oh, no, no big deal." And they go through this a couple times. And then eventually she lays it on thick. She's like, "You're making me look like a fool." So one night in their tent, they're cuddling together, and she's saying, "Hey, why don't you tell me really, if you really love me, right? If you really love me, why don't you tell me your secret?" Well, something must have happened because he tells her that secret. Finally, Samson shared the secret with her. "It's my hair." Hair's important here. "My hair has never been cut," he confessed, "for I was dedicated to God as a Nazirite from birth." So he knows he's supposed to live a certain way. He knows the right things to do. "And if my head were shaved, my strength would leave me. So all you bald guys, God says you're not very strong. I'm sorry, right? I didn't say it. The Bible did. "And I would become as weak as anyone else." So they do this. She cuts his hair. She ties him up. Then she cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." When he woke up, he thought, isn't this what failure does? Isn't this what compromise does? It convinces you that, hey, everything's been okay, but up to this moment, it's been okay. And then there's a moment where it's not okay. That's what happens. He thought up to this moment, he's like, I've woken up. And I will do as I done before. I'll shake myself free. And then you read the saddest words in his life. But he didn't realize the Lord had left him. He didn't realize that his compromises, his decisions, had led him so far down a path that's so far what God had for him, that God's let him sitting in his consequences. So they come, they get him. They captured him, and they gouged out his eyeballs. Sounds fun, doesn't it? They took him to Gaza, where he was bound with bronze chains and forced to grind grain in the prison. He becomes a slave. And we could just spend the rest of the time here talking about, hey, this is what sin does to you. Sin blinds you, and sin enslaves you. So if you want to know what sin does, Samson's life right here. Failure, compromise, doing things we know we're not supposed to do, living outside God's plan for our life. This figuratively could happen to us. It literally happened to him. So here's Samson. How did he get here? Because a lot of people say, well, it was just Delilah was his weakness. Now, there's been a lot of moments leading up to this moment that have brought him here. But here he is, bald, no strength anymore. In this moment, failure, outside of God's will for his life. And here's what he's doing. He's living in his failure. He's living there. He has no other choice. And the last memory he has is of someone gouging out his eyes. That he can see in his mind. That's the last memory he has. But he's living in his failure. You know what the Philistines thought? Like, oh, he's done. He's done. He's just another has-been, another deliverer, another weak judge that God's people couldn't deliver on. The Israelites, they've given up on him. You know, isn't that what we do with people when they make mistakes? Like, hey, they're done. Like, he had potential, but here's what he's living in. And everybody thought it was done. Samson thought it was done. But you know what we don't read? Who said it was done? God didn't say it was over, did he? God didn't say it was over. We didn't start a new chapter yet. We didn't get to a new judge. His story's not over yet. And what God says is really, that's the only voice that really matters, isn't it? But God says it. God hasn't said it's over yet. Now, here's what happens. If you read your Bible and you're like, hey, listen, God only uses perfect people. God only uses people who have it together. You're reading the wrong Bible. You don't understand God. There's Moses, Abraham, David, Peter, Paul, all the people, epic failures at times. Epic failures. All these people had epic moments of failure. Because here's the reality. Everyone fails. Everyone fails. Everyone falls short. Everyone misses the mark. And maybe you've come in here today, you're like, hey, I failed. You're hearing like, my marriage, it's gonna end. It's not working. My relationship with my kids, I don't know what's going on, but that's not working. Man, financially, I don't know if I'm gonna make it past another week. I don't know where I'm gonna get food tomorrow. Everybody fails. It looks differently, but we all fail. You ever look back at chapters of your life and you're like, what if? What if? Like for me, it's like, what if I wasn't so dumb? Like, what if I wasn't so dumb sometimes? Like, what if I just did what I know I was supposed to do? But then I think back, and maybe you think this. What if I never got into that relationship or that friendship? What if I never got in that car? What if I never went to that party? What if I never took that substance? What if I never looked at that image? What if I just would have bit my tongue? What if I would have just not thrown that punch? Man, that can get tricky, the what ifs. Because if you live in that what if, you can start thinking, I just missed it. And the land of what if keeps us haunted by the past. So I imagine Samson as he's shackled up and he's kind of pressing down the grain. All he would literally be doing was walking. He's blind. He'd be holding on something in front of him, walking in a circle. He had a lot of time to think. He's probably thinking, what if I just would have said no to Delilah the second time or the first time. Or if I realized that she wanted to tie me up, what if I would have just ran? Like, that would have happened, right? That makes sense. What if? And then I got to thinking, you know, I've worked with people for a long time now, since I've been 19. I've been in ministry in some capacity, working with different people, different walks of life. And I've noticed the people that are used most by God, they have a couple things. But what holds people back isn't their intelligence, because if that was the case, I wouldn't be up here, right? It's not their abilities or lack of abilities. It's not their talents. What keeps people from being really used by God is the inability to get past the past. And the ones that really are used by God, they've learned to leverage their past in favor to let God work in their lives. So again, the question isn't going to be, because we're not a church that's going to act like this. We're not a church that's going to say, hey, when you fail, what's going to happen? We're going to say, hey, you're a church. We're going to realize, hey, we fail, right? We fail at times. We have moments of failure. And we're not going to write people off. We're going to say, it's not if you fail, because we believe you will. We believe in you, but we believe we're all going to have moments of weaknesses. I'll fail at times. I may fail you. You may get mad at me. Like, we're all going to fail. But the question is, what do I do in the moment of failure? What do I do next? And to do that, I'm going to channel one of my favorite theologians ever, Rocky Balboa. Okay, Rocky Balboa, y'all. And this is what he says. I love it. He says, it's not about how hard you get hit. It's not about how many times you fail. It's not about how many times you get hit by life. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. It's about how much you can take and keep moving. It's about what do we do in our moments of failures. It's about getting up. So, hey, God, I may have failed, but what do I do now? Am I just going to sit here? And really, there's two responses of failure. And we're going to generalize, but there's really two responses. You can be haunted by it. You can say, I'm a failure. I've failed. You can sin in it. You can complain about it. You can live in the land of what if. You can feel sorry for yourself. But it's not going to get you anywhere. There's two choices, and the choice is yours. But only one of these choices is going to get you where you need to be and where you want to be. You can be haunted by it, or you can own it. And owning it's hard, because owning it admits, like, I have failed. I've failed. I've missed the mark. I have sinned. And I no longer want to live in failure. I no longer want to be defined by failure. And so you're going to own it. You're going to admit it. But you're also going to change directions. It's a spiritual concept called repentance, which literally means change directions. So you can own it and say, listen, God, I know I've failed. I know I've messed up. I'm owning it. And I'm changing directions. I'm running to you. I'm running back to you because you're the one who can get me back on my path. You can be haunted by it or you can own it. But only one of these gets you to where you need to be. And as you're thinking, like, what am I going to do with it? Someone once shared this with me, and I want to share it with you. Failure is an event. It's never a person. You may have failed. You may have missed the mark multiple times, but that's not who you are. And that's not what your name is. That's not your identity. It may have been what you've done. Maybe an event or a moment that happens in our life, but it's not who we are. And even in Samson's life, we start to see that. We start to see God working in my favorite verse in all of Judges. It says, but before long, his hair began to grow back. I love this for two reasons. One, I have an irrational fear of going bald. I shared that with my life group last week, right? I barely can pull off the hair and the beard look. Like, I'm not Dwayne The Rock Johnson, y'all. I'm not going to look good with both, right? So I'm so thankful to God when my hair begins to grow after I get a haircut, right? But Samson, I love this part of Samson's story because, listen, even while he's doing his mundane, everyday living, and everybody's counting him off, everybody's counting him out, his hair begins to grow again on his head. He probably didn't even realize it. The Philistines probably didn't even realize it. And what does his hair represent? Who's with him? But before long, God was still with him, and his hair began to grow back. See, what they didn't understand was God never whispered, it's over. So it continues. It says, the Philistines and rulers had a great festival offering sacrifices and praising their God. They said, our God has given us victory over our enemy, Samson. right? And they're celebrating this. And so they're in this giant Colosseum. They're throwing this massive party. They're in this massive Colosseum, right? Thousands of people are there. And they're celebrating, and they're just mocking our God. And it says a couple verses later, half drunk by now, right? They're all there partying, celebrating, they're getting drunk. The people demanded, bring out Samson so he can amuse us. This word amuse in other translations is entertain. In the Hebrew, the original language, it's really this principle of laughing at and making fun of. They're like, let us bring out Samson so we can laugh at him. Let us bring out Samson so we can mock him and mock his God. Isn't that what failure does too? Like when you fail, you go to your family or your workplace and they know you've messed up and it feels like they're all laughing at you, all making fun of you. They're like, bring him out so we can make fun of him. So we can bully him, so we can knock him down, so we can laugh at him. And so he was brought from the prison to amuse them, to be entertainment. And they had him stand between the pillars supporting the roof. And I think this is just a good indicator, like listen, we may not be defined by failure, and it may not be who we are, but sometimes in life, all times, sin and bad decisions have consequences. So Samson's living full force in this consequence right now. And they brought him out, and they put his hands against these two pillars. It's the foundational pillars of the Colosseum. They put his hands against it. And Samson said to the young servant who was leading him by hand, place my hands against the pillars that hold up the temple. I want to rest against them. Put my hands against those pillars. He can't see. Then verse 28 says, then Samson prayed. And I want you to imagine the agony in his voice as he's crying out. Sovereign Lord, remember me again. Oh God, please strengthen me. Just one more time. With one blow, let me pay back the Philistines for the loss of my two eyes. See, in this moment, he's remembering who God is. He's remembering that God is good, that God has delivered his people before, that God has called him to a purpose. He's remembering that he wasn't just created for entertainment, that at the date of his birth, he was set apart. He wasn't born to be made fun of by his enemies. Now, he doesn't still fully get it because he's like, let me pay him back for my loss of my two eyes, but he's starting to get it. And he's remembering who God is. And he says, Sovereign Lord, just one more time. Just one more time. One more time. I know I've messed up a million times. I know I've fallen short so many times, but just one more time. God, one more time. I know I fall short. I know I don't deserve it, but one more time. His hands against these two pillars. And he prayed, let me die with these Philistines. The consequences have brought him this moment. And he pushed with all his might, and the temple crashed down on the Philistine rulers and all the people. So he killed more people when he had died than he had during his entire lifetime. In his final act, he gets to see a little bit of his purpose finally being met. He did more in his last act than he did the rest of his entire life. And it's really a tragic story, isn't it? Because he dies here, and he never accomplishes what God called him to. He's gone, but we, me and you, there's still time. There's still hope to get back on track. And when I read this story, because I've heard it, one of the first stories I've ever heard when I went to church. I thought of this imagery of holding on to pillars. And so today I want to talk about how do we get past failure? Well, we grab hold of two pillars. Pillar number one, I'm forgiven. We realize that when we put our hope in Jesus, because that's the answer to all of this. How do we get past our past? How do I step into this new life? Jesus is the answer to all of it. He answers everything. Our hope is in Jesus. Our future is in Jesus. Our forgiveness is through Jesus. And when we put our faith in Jesus, we get to remember, I'm forgiven. So I don't have to live in my shame. I don't have to live in my pain. I don't have to live in my failure. I don't have to live in my regrets. So you grab hold of that pillar. And then you grab hold of the second pillar. That God can still use me. Yeah, I may have failed. My life may not look the way God thought it would or I thought it would, but God can still use me. If I have breath in my lungs, if my heart is still beating, if I still am old enough to move, if I'm still here on earth, God can still use me for a purpose. So I'm forgiven and God can still use me. It doesn't matter what I've looked like, doesn't matter where I've been, I'm forgiven and God can still use me. and we hold to those pillars, and we cling to those pillars. We grab hold and we build our life on the idea, I'm forgiven, and God can use me. I'm forgiven, and God can use me. And along the way, we also do this. We push down the pillars in the way. Because the idea is to keep living to the attached to these pillars. Keep holding to, I'm forgiven, I have a purpose. But also push down the pillars in your life that keep getting in the way. The failures, the temptations, the substances, the people, the relationship. Push them out of your life so you can step into this new life and not be defined by failure. I'm forgiven. God has a purpose. And as I'm living that out, I'm pushing down the other pillars in my life that keep bringing me back to failure. Because if you want something different, they always say you have to do something different. And it starts by pushing down the pillars in the way. So here's what I want to do today. I want to really encourage you to hold to these pillars in your mind. Say, hey, I'm forgiven. I have a new purpose. God can use me. But I also want to pray over you. So I want you to do something for me, and I know all of you may not like it, but if you've ever failed, ever felt like a failure, ever fallen short, will you just stand up for me? This is what I want to do today. I know God's got something planned for all of our lives. I know God's got something planned for a community we call Revolution, and I want to pray for the strength that we get past our failures, and I want to pray over you. And it's not just me talking over you, it's God speaking this stuff into us. So I'm gonna pray for you because we care about your stories, we care about your future. We know you have a past, and all we care about is what Jesus is gonna do in your life moving forward from this day on. So I'm gonna place my hands over you and I'm gonna pray over you. God, I'm so thankful for the people in this room. God, I'm so thankful for their stories. And I know we got failure in here. I know we got mess in here. I know we got dysfunctional and relationship hurt. We got a lot of things in this room, God, but you're bigger than it all. Father, I'm praying for your strength to fill us, to hold onto the pillars that we're forgiven. Man, that we are sinners that need grace, but we are forgiven through Jesus, and that you can still use us. And you can use us to bring your kingdom here on earth. God, so I'm praying strength over these people. I'm praying courage, power, pray your spirit fills each and every one of us to do the things that you want us to do, to have the power to say no to the cravings of this life and the temptation of this life, but to live in your purpose and not to be haunted by our failures, but to live in the light of the resurrection that you offered us through Jesus. God, again, I love these people, but most of all, we love you for sending Jesus to die for us and giving us new life. It's in your name we pray, amen. We're gonna continue to stand and continue to worship.